One of the ways that we learn things is by being able to pick out which thing is different, which thing doesn't belong with the rest. If you're looking at words, for example, which of these doesn't go with the rest of them? Well, you can see the word cub, obviously, is different from the word cup. If you're learning letters, you're learning words, this is a good way to learn things, and this might actually be quite a bit of a challenge, depending on where you are and knowing your words and your letters, because a B is very similar to a P. But there is one of these that doesn't belong. There's one that's different from the rest. When we look at the book of Philippians, there are some words that occur throughout the book of Philippians. One of those words is the word joy, or words associated with joy. Joy, joyful, rejoice. 16 times in the book of Philippians, the word joy, or some form of the word joy, is found in that letter. It's been called by some the letter of joy, because in this pretty short letter, you've got all these instances of joy, joyful, rejoice. There's another word that comes up several times throughout the first chapter of this letter, and that is the word imprisonment. Now, it would seem that some of these things don't belong with the rest. Which one doesn't belong? Well, how can you simultaneously talk a lot about joy and also talk about being in prison? Or some translations will have in chains or in bonds. How can joy and imprisonment go together? As Paul's writing to these Christians in Philippi, he's telling them about his situation. He essentially says that he's very joyful and he's also in prison. Well, that doesn't seem to go together. So how can those two things be together? And I want to suggest to us that it's because of another word that occurs all throughout the book of Philippians, and that is the word gospel. He can talk about joy and imprisonment and those two things actually going together because of the gospel. So I want us to think about Philippians as being these three important words. We'll spend a few weeks in Philippians on Sunday mornings. And this morning, I want us to think about this as a letter consisting of three important words. The word joy, the word imprisonment, and those two things being held together by the word gospel. The gospel of joy. That really is what this little letter is about. Is about the gospel of joy. The book of Romans is oftentimes talked about as being the letter that's about the gospel. Romans is all about the gospel. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of salvation is how that letter begins. And Romans is about the gospel. If I've looked at it correctly, in Romans, the word gospel is used 9 times. And Romans is a big letter. It's 16 chapters. And in Romans, the word gospel is found 9 times. Well, that's a lot of times to use that word and to talk about the gospel. The book of Philippians is a little short letter. And guess how many times the word gospel is in Philippians? 9 times. And so there's a case to be made that if you really want to talk about a book in the New Testament being about the gospel, well, the book of Philippians, per word, per length of the letter, actually uses that word more than any other book in the New Testament. Paul can talk about his joy within his imprisonment because of the gospel. So when we talk about gospel, what are we talking about? What is that word? What does that word mean? It's a word that actually first comes up in the book of Isaiah. And Isaiah is talking about there being good news. to God's people. In the Old Testament, they're in a difficult situation. They're going to be in difficult situations, exile. But yet there's going to be good news. God is at work among the people. Something good is going to happen. And it really is a word that carries the idea of a king coming, there being something good that's pronounced in a situation that seems hopeless, in a situation of utter despair. There's good news. There's someone who's coming to your aid. And it's a word that is used in that sort of a way. It's a word that can carry the connotation of a victory, of a good message, of a king who comes to save the people when they seem to be in a time of no hope. When we lived on the coast before, it was a place where you'd get hurricanes. You would frequently have a hurricane that would come through, and sometimes those could be really bad, and people would be in difficult situations. And if a person in a difficult time such as that, if a person got word that maybe the governor was going to come visit, or maybe the president was going to come visit and offer some aid, some relief, well, that would be good news. That would be a good message. And the word gospel is a word that's used in kind of a similar kind of a way for people in a situation of hopelessness. Well, someone is going to come visit you and help you out of this state. Well, that's good news. That's a good message. We live in a world of sin and death and brokenness, and yet we have a king who has come to set us free from that. And that surely is good news. That's a good message. That's something that ought to give us joy. And so Paul is in prison as he writes the book of Philippians. We don't know everything about that situation. Prison conditions could vary widely based on where you were and what was going on. But it's believed that it probably was something that looked a bit like this. In those times, typically prison would be a place where a person would be held until they had their trial, until they had their punishment. So typically you're not going to be there for a lifetime like a person potentially could be today. But it's a holding place, and the conditions of that holding place could vary based on what's going on and where you are and all of that. But he talks about the joy that he has because of the gospel. And so in the time that we have left, I want us to look at six areas or six ways that the word gospel is used in Philippians. As we think about these three important words in this letter, joy, imprisonment, and gospel. The first of those is that Paul can have joy because the Philippians are participating with him in the gospel. Because of participation in the gospel, there's joy. In Philippians 1, verses 3 through 5, I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy in my every prayer for you all, in view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now. To participate here means to share in something, to have fellowship in something. Other places in this letter talk about how they have shared in God's grace. They share in the Spirit. They share in suffering. And here Paul expresses joy for their participation in the gospel. This is most likely a reference to their support of him, their financial assistance contribution to him. That's part of the occasion of this letter, is that the Philippians have been helping him. They've been participating with him through financial support and help. And that's talked about near the end of the letter again, in chapter 4 and verse 15. You yourselves also know, Philippians, that at the first preaching of the gospel, after I left Macedonia, no church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving but you alone. And so he's thankful for this. He's joyful because of this. I think about this a little bit like, imagine somebody who's receiving an award. And the person who's getting that award, they've received something, and they say, well, there's a lot of people that I would like to thank. There's a lot of people who made this possible. I would like to thank this person and these people. And as Paul's writing this letter, he says, there's some people who I would like to thank. Some people who have helped me out. And he thanks the Philippians for their participation, for their contribution that they've made to him. We ought to get joy from participating in the gospel, from seeing others participate, from the contribution that we can all make in whatever way it is that we can contribute, and not just a financial contribution, but whatever it is that we're able to do to participate in the gospel. One of the images that's used to talk about the church is of a body, that somebody is a hand, somebody is an ear, somebody is an eye, that together we all make up one body, and that the body all needs to be participating for it to function properly. And when we participate in the gospel, when we see others participating in the gospel, that should be something that gives us joy. And so Paul can have joy because of their participation in the gospel. Secondly, he can have joy because he gets to defend and confirm the gospel. In verse 7 of chapter 1, for it is only right for me to feel this way about you all, because I have you in my heart, since both in my imprisonment and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you all are partakers of grace with me. In all of these verses, we're not going to see the word joy, but I think you have the concept that his joy comes out of what's going on with the gospel. And here he talks about defending and confirming the gospel. Paul might be in prison, but really it's the gospel that's on trial. And he is able to defend and confirm the gospel. And I believe that that gave him great joy. Do we think about defending the gospel as something joyful? As something that we should do joyfully? I wonder if we sometimes kind of almost think of that as being something void of joy. That you kind of have grouchy, grumpy, argumentative people, and they're the ones who are defending, you know, defending the truth. And we don't want to be like that. We want to be joyful. We want to be people of joy. Well, those aren't two different things. It ought to be the case that we get joy out of defending the gospel, that we can defend the gospel joyfully, that our joy is a defense of the gospel. And so he talks here about defending and confirming the gospel. That language is used again just a few verses down. in verse 16, he talks about being appointed for the defense of the gospel. Well, a third reason for joy associated with the gospel is the progress of the gospel. Seeing the progress of the gospel. Still in chapter 1 and in verse 12. Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel. Or some translations will have the word advance, the advancements. Paul may be in chains, but the gospel is not in chains. The gospel is still moving. The gospel is still spreading. It's progressing. It's advancing. And he even says that his persecution is creating a situation where people are becoming more bold, more confident to speak out. And we see that throughout the church. That it's in times of persecution, in times when Christians are imprisoned, in times when Christians are put in chains, that the gospel seems to move about the most freely and to spread the most. It progresses, it advances, it finds a way, it clears a path. Where I grew up, we had woods behind the house, and those woods ended up being covered in kudzu. I don't know how many of you have experience with kudzu, but it'll just go through a place. And there would be people that would go back through there and try to get a machete and cut away so that you might be able to walk somewhere, kind of hike back in there. And from what I understand, this word progress or advance has kind of that connotation of clearing a path, kind of going through and chopping away, making a way, making a path. And while Paul is in chains, the gospel is cutting a path. The gospel is moving about freely. It's spreading. It's growing. It's making its way through the land, so to speak. And that should give us great joy when we see the gospel spreading, progressing, cutting a path, finding a way, growing, advancing. That ought to make us joyful. A fourth area where joy can come from is in living a life worthy of the gospel. Another verse where we find the word gospel is in chapter 1, verse 27. And here it speaks of a life worthy of the gospel. Only conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or remain absent, I will hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. The case can be made that this verse is really what the letter to the Philippians is all about, is living a life worthy of the gospel, standing firm together, living a life worthy of the gospel. And that on the pages that follow, it gets kind of spelled out and illustrated as to what that means and what that looks like, to live a life worthy of the gospel. Also later in this letter, we read about being citizens of heaven, that our citizenship is in heaven, heavenly citizens. We need to live in a way that is worthy of our citizenship. If we are citizens of a place, whether that be locally, a state, a country, whatever it is, if we're a citizen of a place, there's a certain sort of conduct and behavior that generally is associated with being a citizen of that place, living a life worthy of that citizenship. And if we think about our ultimate, most important citizenship being in heaven, citizens of heaven, then we have to live a life worthy of that citizenship. A life that's worthy of this good news. Jesus made a sacrifice of great worth. His sacrifice was of great worth. And so we then need to respond to that in a worthy way, a worthy way. Placing a great amount of worth on what the gospel has done for us. And to live in a way worthy, meaning that we place worth on it. We value it. We value the gospel of Christ. We value our citizenship. And that our conduct bears that out. Well, you may have noticed that we have another of the gospel phrase at the end of this verse. A fifth area where we can get joy is through the faith of the gospel. This verse also mentions the faith of the gospel, which is kind of an interesting phrase, the faith of the gospel. When you look around this verse, or earlier in this verse, it talks about standing firm together, striving together. That could be understood as military sort of language. We've been talking about spiritual warfare, standing firm, holding your position, that kind of a thing. And it talks after that about the faith of the gospel. The book of Jude, for example, talks about contending for the gospel. We need to contend for the gospel. And when you go to chapter 4 of Philippians, we've got another instance of gospel that maybe can be understood a bit similar to this one. In chapter 4, verses 2 and 3, I urge Euodia and I urge Syntyche to live in harmony in the Lord. Indeed, true companion, I ask you also to help these women who have, the New American Standard has, shared my struggle in the cause of the gospel. Some translations will have labored in the gospel or contended in the gospel or for the gospel. That we have a struggle. We have a laboring. We need to contend for it. That this is effort. This is work. This is spiritual warfare. That we contend for the gospel. Or we contend for the faith. We contend for the faith. And what is our faith rooted in? It's rooted in good news. Well, the sixth and final area that I want us to think about this morning is another time we see this word, gospel. Philippians 2 and verse 22. Here it's talking about Timothy and how Timothy has been a good example. Timothy has shown what it means to be a Christian, to live a life worthy. And it says about Timothy here, but you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel. We should get joy out of serving in the gospel, seeing others serve in the gospel. The word serve is one of those words that we use so often that perhaps the significance of it gets lost on us. We talk about people serving on a board, serving on a committee. A governor serves the state. We talk about the president who serves the nation. But when you really look at what the word serve means, and to be a servant, it means that you have a master and that you are doing things according to how the master would have them to be done. Paul and Timothy were serving their master. And we can only have one master who we follow, who we submit to. And it should be something that gives us great joy that we get to be servants, that we get to have a good master who we can follow. Well, in Philippians, we have three important words: joy, imprisonment. And we see that those two words actually do go together because of the word gospel. Because there's good news, there's a good message that we can find joy in our circumstances. In our Ezekiel class, we've talked some about being in a siege, being under attack, being in a situation where there's no hope, all supplies are cut off, there's no bright future on the horizon. And imagine being in that scenario where you know that your death is imminent, where you know that you have no hope. And in that situation, somebody comes to you and they say, your king knows about your situation and your king is coming to save you and to rescue you. Well, that would be good news. That would be cause for rejoicing. Be joyful. Our king is coming to save us. Get us out of this. Well, in a very real sense, that is the situation that we find ourselves in. When we are in sin, we are in a state of hopelessness, of despair. Our enemy has us under control. There is no bright future. And yet when we hear the message that your king is coming to save you and to get you out of this, well, that ought to fill our hearts with joy. And we ought to rejoice and be glad that our king has come to rescue us. And so if you are here this morning and you need to respond to that good message, we understand in the Bible that we do that by being baptized, being buried and raised again, having our sins washed away in a new life. If you've done that and there's something else that we can help you with this morning, please let us know as we stand and sing our invitation song.